Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle. And as promised, we'll start straight away with our Christmas giveaway contest.
Yay, so you don't have to listen to everything if you don't want to.
Yeah.
But they just have to listen to that. So we've received two games, our two recommendations for 2013 from the companies that provide them, which are what, Wayne?
We got a copy of 13th Age from Pelgrane Press, and we got a copy of the Cortex Plus Hacker's Guide from Margaret Weiss Productions. And as you said, Lyle, both of those were rated very highly by us during the past year. Mm-hmm. So it was very kind of them to supply PDF copies for this contest we're doing.
So the rules are pretty simple. The first person to email in the answer to the questions, they win a copy of the PDF from us. You can send in to the email info@idleredhands.com, info@idleredhands.com. You're free to answer both of the questions. However, we will only award one prize to one winner. So whichever question you answer first, that's the PDF we'll give you, and then we'll move on to the next winner for the second PDF. Unless, of course, the person has already won, in which case we'll get your second answer. And man, that's kind of confusing, but. Yeah, anyway, other than that, it's pretty simple. So, send in your answers.
Simplicity is difficult.
That's like our fifth take of the rule.
All right, so the questions are...
In our campaign confessions of Marvel Heroic Roleplaying, what characters did myself, Chris, and Yujiro play as?
Yeah, which superheroes?
Yeah, it is a bit anticlimactic, yeah, isn't it? You're kind of like, and the question's done.
I think we were waiting for somebody to answer.
Yeah, right. We've all been teaching for a while. Somebody's raising their hand.
And that's for the breakout game, not for the Civil War game that we later play.
Oh, correct. Yeah, correct. Good point, Lyle. Yeah.
So don't answer Namor and Doctor Strange.
Yes.
if you're starting to write that, then start again. And the question for 13th Age... comes from John Keegan's History of Warfare, and we've made a lot of reference to the six forms of military organization, or six types of warriors.
Or four.
And we've mentioned four of these a lot in our our episodes, but there's actually six. But all we want to know in the questions are, what are the four warrior types that we often mention in our episodes?
And if you give all six, that's okay.
No, absolutely, yeah. What are four of the six? Mm. But two of them we don't mention that often, and maybe even the six we've never mentioned. Or we mentioned it and we completely forgot. we may have mentioned it in the first episode we brought this up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, please answer straight away, and we will let the winner know straight away through email, and we will announce the winners, if they don't mind, on the next episode.
Good luck, everybody.
Yes.
And that, for us, wraps up 2013. So this will be our last episode of the year, and we will be going on a brief hiatus. Mm-hmm. So we will skip a week from our normal uploads.
Yeah, because New Year's is the bigger holiday here in Japan.
Yeah, everything shuts down. Banks, ATMs, the whole internet. That's why we can't upload.
Yeah, I'm surprised the whole internet doesn't shut down over here, because we all know ATMs need to take a break, right?
Yeah.
Now, we already talked about our resolutions for 2014, our gaming resolutions, but I guess there's some pretty big news. Perhaps the biggest news of 2014, and that would be...
Of course, the big news in the gaming community is that WotC has officially announced a summer 2014 release date for D&D Next.
Woo!
No idea if it's going to be called D&D Next, but hey, who knows? And of course, everyone's suspicions of it being released in time to coincide with Gen Con and, what, the 30th anniversary of Dungeons & Dragons was correct, so...
Hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, but that's standard time to release a game is in time for GemCon, especially a Dungeons and Dragons game, since they have such a strong connection with that particular convention.
Yeah, absolutely.
So kind of surprising, from what I heard, they didn't have that strong of a presence this year, only because their big thing was still in the works.
Well, they did playtesting of it at GenCon, didn't they? They had like a big open playtesting area.
Yeah, but from what I hear, their presence there was not as large as it has been in previous years.
Interesting.
And I don't mean like, people who attended or went to the booth. I mean like the size of the booth they had and where the WotC booth was. Mm-hmm. Again.
Are they going to splash out?
I'm sure they are this year. next year. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it'd be something to see.
But you said some people had some criticisms or suspicions. I don't know.
Well, and their name is Wayne.
Yeah. Well, no. Somebody pointed out that, okay, the public playtest ended, like, I forget exactly, but it was only like a month ago. Mm-hmm. And if they're planning to release this, let's say, August, you know, late summer, and that's when Gen Con is, that's only about, like, what, 6 or 7 months? Mm-hmm. To get this book finished up, printed, and, you know, shipped back from China probably to the States in enough quantities to have enough to sell for Gen Con. And that's a pretty tight deadline.
I don't know. 6 months is plenty of time to put a book together.
If it's finished and all you have to do is layout.
Hmm. Well, I mean, they've been working on the art for a long time, so I would be surprised if they didn't have most of the art already decided.
Okay, fair enough. But still, I was thinking, like, shipping and, well, anyway. A couple people have said, you know, that's fairly tight, and I just kind of wonder how much of that last round of feedback they're going to incorporate. Mm.
I think if somebody writes in this last play test that they could explain a certain power a little bit more clearly, or there is the phrasing's wrong or something like that, then they have a good chance of that being included, because that's very easy to do. But if somebody's going to suggest that they maybe not go with Fancy and Magic, that's not going to go in. I mean, stuff like that would need to go in the early playtests.
Right, right.
If at all. I mean, I think they had a fairly clear idea what they wanted to do in certain things, and everything else is filling in the corners or refining those ideas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get the same feeling. Oh, sorry.
No, did you guys fill out any of the surveys? Because I think I filled out about like 2 or 3 of them.
And... Oh, yeah. Yeah, I kept going all the way to the end.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. I didn't download the last packet just because, you know, my interest had kind of tapered off at that point.
And I felt kind of bad because, you know, I would have liked to have playtested all the packets and then answered the survey based on that. But, yeah, for the last, probably left half dozen or so of them, I just had to, like, skip the questions that referred specifically to playtesting.
Right, right. I was just wondering, because we were not part of the friends and family playtest. We were part of the public playtest. So who knows what they saw and what kind of feedback they were asked for. But in terms of like typos and stuff, we weren't asked about that at all. We were asked about more, you know, high level stuff like does this skill mechanic work, or, you know, what do you think of these feats, or do classes feel correct and stuff like that. So again, I'm not saying that, you know, they're not going to incorporate that feedback, but it's even up until the end, it wasn't, in my opinion, minor stuff such as this wasn't clear. It was kind of, it could be possibly be big chunks like this does not work or we don't like this. Mm-hmm. So
I mean, that's a good point. They're not doing themselves any favors by having questions that are very hard to categorize. Mm. Because if you're asking about like a high level thing about do the classes feel right, somebody's like, no.
What do you do then?
Well, then you then you look at how many people said no and how many people said yes, and you said, well, okay, you know.
Yeah, but by having it so open, they're not knowing why they're saying yes, why they're saying no, and subdividing it, and that's when when you're getting a lot of survey information, they would get like hundreds and hundreds, perhaps thousands and thousands of answers.
Right.
That it just makes it a lot easier to do it, and I'm sure they had dedicated people to divide things and try to find similarities and commonalities, but if you don't write the questions in a certain way, it can be very manual,
right?
Like how you divide it.
Well, the questions I remember answering from the surveys I did were pretty fair, as opposed to the wording for some of the questions on the articles. Remember, like the articles would have those polls, and the wording would be really, I'm trying to think of a word, really deceptive. Mm-hmm. Where it would be, you know, not does this match your idea of this, you know, Monster X? It would be like, does this match the description we've just written about Monster X, you know?
Right. So. But I mean, that feels like where they're starting to narrow down the things. Like, we pretty much decided this is what Monster X is, so does the text surrounding it, the stats surrounding it feel right? As opposed to, what do you think they should be?
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Chris. I actually like that type of wording at a certain stage in your playtest, right?
Right.
But if you ask a question that's like does this image match your idea of a hobgoblin? It's not something that you want to ask a gamer. Mm-hmm. You're going to get like really nitpicky questions. I mean, people who listen to our episode probably get a lot of that.
So. What, from us and all our nitpicking? Or just me and my nitpicking?
No, all of us will nitpick on certain
things. We can take hair splitting to a brand new level.
Right.
We split that already split hair?
Exactly.
So, no, questions like what color is D&D for you? Just
That was a ridiculous article. I'm sorry.
Well, it is and it isn't. I mean, if you're going to roll out a certain color scheme, that matters to people.
It certainly does.
We're designing something right now, and we're looking at colors and how bright and metallic and glossy things need to look to appeal to a certain market. I mean, that is important. So when they ask it without any context, I guess that can get a very honest answer, but can get a lot of people going, what?
Yeah.
Color, what? But they might be looking at it, it's like, hey, did you like the brown? If you go, did you like the brown third edition books? And somebody, you know, can't move on from Advanced Dungeons and Dragons, they're going to go, no, I didn't like those. I really like Advanced Dungeons and Dragons. Even though if they saw maybe a game that didn't have Dungeons and Dragons and they hadn't been playing for 30 years, they wouldn't like that art because it hasn't progressed in the last few decades.
Right.
They might actually like something from 4E, but they can't get over the fact that they hate 4E as a game.
Even though they've never played it.
Even though they didn't play it, but they can't, you know, they can't appreciate what the art is or whatever. So, yeah, it could be clever, but, you know, sometimes you can get too clever.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a wishy-washy answer. way to commit.
Yeah.
Well, I was always of the mind that the playtest is a little bit of a gimmick.
Right.
And a customer service exercise. And that, I mean, if you're going to ask, I read something really interesting from a marketing person, and he said if you went through a focus group and asked them about like a hamburger restaurant, they would tell you how to make the current hamburger restaurants better. Okay. But they wouldn't have made a leap from what was out there currently to something like a McDonald's. Because they would just go on their own experience and say, hey, you know, when I get a hamburger, this would actually be a better version of that. And you very, very rarely get, you know, through a focus group or survey somebody actually saying, hey, you know, this completely new idea. And in a sense, why would they? Because if they have a great idea, they might want to explore that, but they're not going to jump away. So people are going to go back and give them ideas on how to make a game more appealing to them, which is what the frame of reference is, but not necessarily give them ideas on how to make a game more appealing to a wider group of players.
Yeah.
Right. And especially it's very hard to put yourself in another person's shoes and think about, hey, what would appeal to that person? Or this person's never even played a role-playing game. What would get them to pick up this book? That's really hard.
Yeah, I've said it before on probably a dozen occasions that I think the whole thing just felt really forced, as if there was corporate interests that were demanding that these kinds of playtests be done, because it had a very positive impact for Pathfinder, and that's D&D's main competition. So I'm sure we'll never know the truth of it, but that's a feeling I've got all the way through.
No, I kind of said the same thing today at kind of said the same thing to Lyle today while we were at work. And, you know, the public playtest seemed to work really well for Pathfinder. Fantasy Flight Games did a public playtest that you had to pay for Edge of the Empire, the Star Wars game. But the difference to me there is both of those games felt relatively finished. And I'm pretty sure the designers and creators of that game said, we're fairly confident that we have decent games here. Turn it over to the public. What do you guys think? You know, where with D&D Next, it felt very much like, we don't know what we're doing here. We're just going to throw something out there, and you guys tell us if you like it or not. Only because there were so many iterations, and all of them were different. And sometimes there were, in my opinion, too many moving parts or too many changes for in each of the iterations of D&D Next, and you couldn't really get a feel for what had changed, or, you know, sometimes changing too many things at once is you know, has a negative effect, because then you're just like, well, the other one worked fine, but, you know, now too many things are different.
I think that they from the very get-go, they were kind of saying, we want to remake a new version of D&D. We want to make it appealing to the widest group that we can. So we, from the very get-go, we want to hear what everybody's opinion is. So I don't think that, I think they start out with it. However, with that said, I still agree with you completely that it often felt jumbled and like there were too many moving parts going on at once. Like things weren't set for too long of a period. So
I don't know. I kind of think they should have. Fair enough. Okay, get your market research and find out what people would want out of this game, and then make something, you know, that you feel fits that, and then release it into the wild and see what people think. Mm-hmm. Again, it kind of feels like they released stuff a little bit too early. And again, I think they had to, because 4th edition wasn't selling well. For whatever reason, they dropped it. And I'm sure Hasbro said, you know, this next edition has to work. So start on that right now. And, you know, I think 2 years was too long for a playtest like this. But then again, I think they had to do it.
I agree.
So,
well, it's... Yeah, damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Right.
If they had a 6 month or a 1 year playtest, everybody's like, well, they're not even going to listen to us.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
Because it's not long enough. If they did a 1 year playtest and then 2 years later they released the game, everybody's like, well, what?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you lose that momentum. So I think that the time frame was fine. I think maybe the jumbled aspect is they went with maybe too much of a blank slate to begin. So somebody like Paizo, they went, okay, we want to do 3.5 next generation. So you're looking at not even one edition. You're looking at the 0.5 version of an edition.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that's a pretty narrow place to start, which is great in that the fact that you can make the changes you want to make in that and then say, hey, what do you guys think? Or what are the changes you would make to 3.5?
Right.
And you'll still get people saying, oh, I want this from AD&D. But with D&D Next, yeah, they trying to promote all things to all people.
Right.
So they're looking at, I'll say four different versions of the game. You know, yes, there are more than four different versions of the game, but I think people know, like, 4th edition, 3.5, 2nd, and AD&D. Mm-hmm. Maybe even Dungeons & Dragons. So, yeah, you got all of these things to go from. I'm not saying that they're all radically different. They certainly share a lot of things in common, despite the critics, but... Yeah, it can give it a jumbled aspect.
Yeah, for what it's worth, of course, you know, as I've said before, I really wish them all the best, and I hope that they turn out an awesome game. And we will definitely give it a playtest when it comes out. Right, guys?
Yeah, we'll do that. And you know what I'm thinking is something else that we need to do is that we did give a review to 13th Age, and we will be following up 13th Age with a campaign confessions. But I don't think we give a proper review to Cortex Plus.
We didn't give a read-through review like we did. We only gave a review of Marvel.
That's correct. So far, Marvel's the only Cortex game we've played. But with the Hacker's Guide, I mean, we've talked about doing other stuff with it. And now we have a, you know, kind of generic action, generic drama, and maybe a kind of a generic heroic system with the Cortex Plus Hacker's Guide. So
we definitely have a fantasy heroic. So.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, yeah, there's something that we can do there, whether or not we do a campaign confessions or do a review of the entire book, which does, as you say, cover three different systems.
Yeah. Plus, I mean, it's the Hacker's Guide, so it's how to hack existing Cortex games. So, All right, apparently I ended that conversation.
Yeah.
You are correct, sir.
Yeah, you just read the title. All right, well, that just wraps up our very short episode, which was just the Christmas giveaway contest, as well as a little bit of a discussion on D&D Next.
One final rant to end out the year.
Yeah, that was barely a rant.
Nah. All right, yeah, and that'll wrap us up for the year. So thank you for joining us again, and check us out online at www.idleredhands.com, idleredhands.com. You can listen to the episode right there on the website, or stream it through iTunes or Stitcher, or download it off of DriveThruRPG. You can follow us on Twitter, you can like us on Facebook, you can sign up and join in our forums. Those are at idleredhands.com/forums, hosted by Happy Jacks. Thank you very much, guys. Or you can send us an email at info@idleredhands.com, hopefully an email containing an answer to one of those questions. Again, good luck, thanks, and we'll see you next time.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Happy holidays.
And Happy New Year.
And a Happy New Year.
Perhaps the biggest news of 2014, and that would be...
Margaret Weiss Productions got Firefly back, because it's been a while since D&D Next was announced. Sorry, I just killed that, didn't I?
All right. Yeah, thanks for going off the script.
Well, the natural outtake. On that one, man.
Drive Through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive Through RPG. The one true source for RPGs.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.